The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The following articles are from Black Enterprise Magazine. The first article is titled, Biden Administration Aides Praise Vice President Kamala Harris After Unfavorable CNN Report. White House aides came to the defense of Vice President Kamala Harris following a CNN report detailing frustrations among her team and White House officials about her role. In the article published Sunday, CNN spoke with nearly three dozen former and current Harris aides, administration officials, Democratic operatives, donors, and outside advisors. According to the interviews, many in President Joe Biden's circle expressed frustration that Harris is not being adequately prepared or positioned and is instead being sidelined when it comes to White House decisions and legislation. CNN added that Harris has told several of her aides that she feels constrained in what she's been able to do politically. Additionally, those around Harris are wary of even hinting at Harris's future political ambitions, with Biden's team highly aware of signs of disloyalty. Several Biden aides came to Harris's defense after the article was released, including White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. For anyone who needs to hear it, at Vice President is not only a vital partner to at POTUS, but a bold leader who has taken on key important challenges facing the country, from voting rights to addressing root causes of migration to expanding broadband. Psaki tweeted Sunday morning. White House Communications Director Kate Bedingfield and White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain both retweeted Psaki's statement. Long Beach, California Mayor Robert Garcia also tweeted his support for Harris. Our Vice President Kamala Harris just finished a highly successful trip where she strengthened diplomatic relationships. She takes on the most complex assignments because she is capable and smart. She's a great leader who also happens to be funny and kind. And that's the tweet, Garcia wrote. Several Harris officials also pushed back against the article, including her senior advisor and chief spokesperson, Simone Sanders. America's first Black and female vice president recently completed a trip to France in which President Emmanuel Macron had nothing but praise for Harris. I can tell you French people are extremely proud to have you here, Macron said at the start of their bilateral meeting. Their first meeting ran so long, aides tried to intervene and wrap up the meeting. Macron also gave Harris a tour of Elysee Palace, pointing out the desk of France's first modern president, Charles de Gaulle, who had a strained relationship with the United States. The next article is titled, Amended Lawsuit Alleges an Officer in Andrew Brown Police Shooting Told Investigators He, quote-unquote, altered his gun. An amended lawsuit filed by the family of Andrew Brown Jr. alleges one of the officers who shot Brown told investigators he altered his gun after the shooting and before it was seized. In April, Brown Jr., 42, was shot and killed by Pasquotank County deputies in North Carolina as they attempted to serve a warrant for his arrest. District Attorney Andrew Womble announced the officers were justified in shooting in May, adding Brown drove toward the officers while trying to escape. However, the lawsuit alleges Pasquotank County Sheriff's investigator Daniel Meads told the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation, SBI, in an interview he altered the gun he used to shoot at Brown's vehicle while he was in a dark room inside Brown's house and before his weapon was confiscated as evidence. According to the amended lawsuit, Meads left out that he removed his magazine inside the victim's house when he was first interviewed and only told investigators after the gun was seen on another officer's body cam footage. Additionally, the lawsuit states a detective who was at the scene told SBI investigators Meads asked him to shine a flashlight on him in Brown's house so he could count the remaining rounds in his weapon before handing it in. The suit adds Meads was nervous about how many times he fired his weapon at Brown's vehicle. Harry Daniels, an attorney for the Brown estate, said the suit was amended to include specific allegations against the officers because more detailed information came to light after the attorneys for the victim's family gained access to SBI files. According to CNN, the suit now names Meads, Pasquotank County Sheriff Tommy Wooten, Deputy Sheriff II Robert Morgan, CPL Aaron Llewellyn, and Western Surety Bonding Company, an insurance company for the department, as defendants. The lawsuit also claims the warrant for Brown was unlawful because a judge did not sign it. President Joe Biden signs executive order to address crisis of violence against Native Americans, is the title of the next article. President Joe Biden signed an executive order Monday directing federal agencies, including Homeland Security, to create a strategy to address a crisis of violence against Native Americans. The order tasked the DOJ, Interior and Homeland Security to address and create a strategy in 240 days for specific law enforcement issues and to provide tribal nations with support in implementing tribally centered responses as well to combat violence against Native communities. Additionally, the Department of Health and Human Services will be tasked with developing plans for violence prevention and victim support. Along with Biden during the announcement was his wife, Jill, Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra, Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, Attorney General Merrick Garland, and Deputy of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas. Today, I am directing federal officials to work with tribal nations on a strategy to improve public safety and advance justice, Biden said at the White House's first ever Tribal Leaders Summit, according to CNN. This builds on the work we did together on reauthorizing the Violence Against Women Act in 2013, when we granted authority to tribes to exercise jurisdiction over non-Indian offenders who commit violence on tribal lands. The Biden administration has made other efforts to curb the number of missing and murdered Native Americans. Thousands of indigenous women and girls have been killed or vanished for years. Their families and activists say the cases are often disregarded or ignored by federal law enforcement, which investigates crimes on tribal lands. In April, Haaland announced a new unit within her department's Bureau of Indian Affairs aimed at the crisis of missing and murdered Native Americans, calling it a crisis that has been underfunded for decades. The Justice Department states 46% of all Native American women have experienced rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner and on some reservations. Native American women are murdered at a rate more than 10 times the national average. Biden announced his administration also directs more than 20 agencies to protect tribal treaty rights. Under the executive order, representatives from the Departments of Agriculture, Defense, Commerce, Education, Energy, Homeland Security, Housing and Urban Development, Interior, Justice, Labor, Transportation, Veteran Affairs, State and the Environmental Protection Agency, Office of Personnel Management, the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, and the Council Environmental Quality will be required to issue reports over the next 180 days on efforts to strengthen treaty protections. The next article is titled Historical Black Colleges and Universities to Receive Major Boost in Tech Funding Due to President Biden's Spending Bill. Historically, Black colleges and universities leaders are waiting with bated breath on the passage of President Biden's Build Back Better agenda, as it includes record funding for Black colleges. Biden's bill would provide $6 billion for science, technology, engineering, and math programs at historically Black colleges and universities, and minority-serving institutions. Civil rights and education advocates say the funding is paramount in order for HBCU to compete with top-tier research universities specializing in science and technology such as MIT. Thurgood Marshall College Fund President Harry Williams told NBC News that not one HBCU school has reached the level of a first-tier institution. Schools that excel in research activities through doctoral programs. Tier 1 programs include Stanford, Harvard, Duke, and the University of Pennsylvania. However, a dozen HBCUs are considered second-tier institutions, and Williams said the funding could be a game-changer for HBCUs and MSIs looking to improve their STEM programs. The significance here is that there's an opportunity for an HBCU to move into the top echelon, and it requires this type of federal investment for that to happen, he said. We want to build on this to continue to demonstrate clearly this type of investment is only going to yield a positive outcome for the African American community. North Carolina A&T, the largest HBCU in America, has significant STEM and research projects, but faces a $100 million maintenance backlog. Passing the package would provide the funds needed to put North Carolina A&T on a stronger financial foundation. There has been a new focus on STEM and technology at HBCUs in recent years. Google, Microsoft, and Apple have all announced HBCU technology programs. HBCUs represent 3% of colleges and universities in the U.S. However, they enroll 10% of all Black students in the country. Additionally, 24% of Black graduates with a bachelor's degree from an HBCU majored in a STEM field. Many, including President Biden, believe that HBCU students and STEM programs can help close the U.S. tech talent gap. The next article is titled, A Man Has Served More Than 40 Years in Prison for a Triple Murder Prosecutors Now Say He Did Not Commit. Kevin Strickland, who has maintained his innocence through 43 years in prison for a triple murder, got an opportunity to testify at a three-day hearing that could lead to his release. Strickland, 62, was convicted on one count of capital murder and two counts of second-degree murder when four people were shot in Kansas City in 1978. The only person who survived, Cynthia Douglas, who died in 2015, testified Strickland was at the scene. Strickland has been an inmate at Western Missouri Correctional Center in Cameroon, Missouri, but never changed his story of innocence. Jackson County Prosecutor Gene Peters Baker agrees. On Monday, the first day of evidentiary hearing, Strickland took the stand and again maintained his innocence. I wasn't about to plead guilty to a crime I had absolutely nothing to do with, Strickland said during Monday's hearing, according to CNN, wasn't going to do it. At 18 years old, and I knew the system worked. So I knew that I wouldn't be vindicated. I wouldn't be found guilty of a crime I did not commit. I would not take a plea deal and admit to something I did not do. The 3-day hearing concluded Wednesday, and the judge is expected to make a decision soon. Douglas, who sustained a shotgun injury in the incident, told police that two other people were the perpetrators and didn't identify Douglas until the next day, saying she was under the influence of marijuana and cognac when the incident happened. Over the last 3 decades, Douglas said she made a mistake in identifying Strickland and made efforts to get him released with the help of the Midwest Innocent Project. According to Strickland's attorney, Robert Hoffman, the two other people Douglas identified, Vincent Bell and Klein Atkins, both pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and served 10 years. In August, Peters Baker filed a motion to free Strickland, saying, "Most of us have heard the famous quotation that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Kevin Strickland stands as our own example of what happens when a system set to be just gets it terribly wrong. The Missouri General Assembly and Governor Parson deserve credit for creating a new legal avenue for a local prosecutor to seek relief, making it possible for an officer of the court to stand before a judge and argue to correct a wrong is a system of justice we can all stand behind." According to an annual report by the National Registry of Exonerations, in the last year alone, there were more than 129 exonerations nationwide, costing an average of 13.4 years per person. The majority, 87, were the result of official misconduct. The next article is titled, "Black Ohio Officer Keith Poole, who was given KKK sign by his chief, filed a civil rights complaint." A black officer in Sheffield Lake, Ohio, has filed a racial discrimination complaint with the state's Civil Rights Commission after his chief left a note with the Ku Klux Klan on his raincoat. The incident was captured on video this summer. The officer, Keith Poole, announced the complaint against the Sheffield Lake Police Force at a news conference, saying city officials did little to stem a tide of racist misconduct by the chief at the time, Anthony Campo. Campo said the note was meant as a joke, but resigned days after the incident went public. Poole, 57, became Sheffield's first black police officer last year and is currently employed by the city. During a video news conference Thursday, Poole said Campo has a history of racial incidents, including calling Poole the N-word, and regularly posted racist flyers on a bulletin board targeting him and a Hispanic officer. In the video, recorded on June 25, 2020, Campo can be seen walking to the office copier, grabbing a sheet of paper, and placing it on Poole's raincoat. Campo then walks back to the copier and watches Poole walk around toward the coat. A few minutes later, when Poole confronted Campo, the chief rolled up several papers and placed it on his head to simulate the KKK hat. Poole's lawyers obtained the video through records request, according to the New York Times. "My exact words were, 'Are you serious?' Officer Poole said at the conference Thursday, and I just looked at him. What else can you say to the chief of police who had done something so heinous and so awful to the first black officer ever? It's not understandable." Sheffield Lake Mayor Dennis Bring told WKYC in June that shortly after the incident, he apologized to Poole and rejected Campo's explanation of the incident. "I said I don't even want to hear about it," Bring said about the conversation with Campo. "I said you have already admitted to it. And I said, you've got 10 minutes to get out of this office. I said, I want your keys, badge, and that's it. Get out. Poole, who has worked in law enforcement for more than 3 decades, said the incident struck a nerve because he recently learned a member of the KKK killed his great uncle. The next article is titled, New Bill Would Provide GI Bill Benefits to Descendants of Black World War II Veterans. Congressional Democrats are reintroducing a bill that would repay the families of Black American veterans who fought in World War II but denied GI Bill benefits. The GI Bill Restoration Act was introduced by House Majority Whip James E. Clyburn and Representative Seth Moulton and Senator Raphael Warnock on Veterans Day. The act would provide descendants of Black World War II veterans a transferable benefit that could be used to obtain housing, go to college, or start a business. The legislation would extend access of GI Bill educational assistance benefits to the surviving spouse and direct descendants of Black veterans who were alive when the bill took effect. It would also extend access to the VA Loan Guarantee Program, which helps to provide home loans to veterans and surviving spouses. According to these senators, Black veterans had limited access to GI Bill benefits because racist white officials ran most state and local veteran administrations. We must rectify what happened not only to Sergeant Woodard, but to all Black World War II veterans who were treated unjustly when they returned home from serving their country and denied their GI Bill benefits, Congress Clyburn said in a statement. We all know that the quickest way to build wealth is through education and home ownership. So many Black families were denied this path to the middle class. It is important to acknowledge this injustice and help address the wealth gap that was exacerbated by the government's failure to fulfill this promise to World War II veterans of color. Under the bill, the Government Accountability Office would be required to establish a group of independent experts to assess inequities in how GI Bill benefits are distributed to minority and female service members. Moulton, who drafted the legislation, said most Americans don't know just how many Black veterans were denied GI Bill benefits despite laying their lives on the line. We all know the GI Bill lifted up a generation of World War II veterans and built the American century. It's been called the most successful piece of legislation ever, but most Americans don't know that many Black veterans were left out, denied benefits, denied homes, denied the generational wealth that comes from going to college, said Congressman Moulton, the author of the bill. We can never fully repay those American heroes, but we can fix this going forward for their families. While our generation didn't commit this wrong, we should be committed to making it right. This legislation honors our nation's commitment to America's vets. The next article is titled, Meet the Woman Behind the Akina App, Fostering Connections Between Black Moms Across the Globe. Akina, a social gathering community for Black mothers, aunties, bonus moms, and caregivers, launched November 11th. Swahili for Strong Family Bond, Akina is a first-of-its-kind social experience that nurtures Black mothers and women in an online environment that connects, educates, and inspires. With more than 20,000 women on the wait list, Akina launched as one of the largest platforms to date where Black moms can connect in a community. Founded by veteran communications specialist and mother of three, Lee Butler, the all-in-one platform will act as a safe, nurturing space where mothers can come and garner support and essential resources, something Butler desperately needed following her own set of tragic circumstances that came just shy after the birth of her youngest son. The truth is that it takes a village to raise a child, and every woman deserves access to that type of community. This is where Akina was born. Swahili for strong family bond. Akina is now that village realized. The new Akina app will offer several interactive elements catered to the needs of Black mothers and the unique challenges they face. Highlighted perks will include on-demand content, chats, meeting rooms, live streams, events, networking opportunities, and more. The Akina Live element will be the ultimate reward as an artful blend of social powerhouses, Clubhouse, Google Meet, and Instagram Live, all rolled into one unique, easy-to-use feature. Studies over the decades have continuously stressed the disparities Black women face surrounding their mental health, their maternal health. Oftentimes, Black women experience death during pregnancy or childbirth, fibroids, and other maternal complications at a devastatingly higher rate than white women. As such, the Akina app will be at the helm to offer content and resources from all-star experts ranging from doulas to doctors to mompreneurs and educators to make the community of Akina women stronger, wiser, and better equipped to take care of herself and the children she loves. The current Akina Village includes support by Milk Space LLC, Black Moms Connection, the Dim Black Mamas podcast, and a wealth of other brands. The Akina app launches officially on November 11th and will be available to download on devices in the United States and Canada via Apple and Google Play. It will celebrate the milestone by donating to the National Black Child Development Institute, the Alignment Chapter, and Black Moms Connection with additional efforts to be announced in the future. For more information or to join the community, visit meetakina.com or follow at meetakina on social media. The next article is titled, Black Business Owners of Big Red's Hot Sauce Makes Forbes Next 1000 List. Paul had other plans and quickly pivoted to change the scope of the business. As a manufacturer, he saw opportunities to help not just his business, but others like his own. He was able to use his manufacturing skills and knowledge and equipment to create a new revenue stream. With the funds he earned, he invested in marketing to increase online orders. He even caught the attention of hip-hop mogul Master P. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.